It's time to awaken to your ultimate potential.
Always something to learn.
The more real and truthful you can get with yourself, the happier you're going to be.
Nothing happens in the comfort zone.
There are no set rules on how to attain success and to feel fulfilled.
Each one of us are born with a purpose.
For me, I knew there was something bigger.
You don't conquer the mountain, you conquer yourself.
I'm Crystal Bauer, wellness expert and entrepreneur. Each week, I'm speaking with incredible individuals, inspiring you to awaken your ultimate potential. Welcome to the Live Greatly podcast.
Keep the microphone in front of them and just let them talk for a little bit and help them articulate what they're trying to get at. Because again, people don't ask you a lot about this stuff. Your family might not ask you about this stuff. So your friends might not ask you. No one really sits down and takes like a really active interest in you.
If you're looking to build connection and learn how to better communicate, this episode is going to bring you a ton of value. I'm really excited to share the conversation with Joe Cohone. Joe is the author of The Power of Strangers, The Benefits of Connection in a Suspicious World. I got introduced to Joe through Jason Pfeiffer, who's the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. And Joe used to work at Entrepreneur along with other magazines as well. And he's done a lot of research into social connection, why we feel uncomfortable in certain situations, why we get uncomfortable to talk to strangers, and what we can do to really build deeper connection and to get out of our comfort zone to start to break free from the problems of loneliness and disconnection. So I'm super pumped. Let's go ahead and welcome Joe to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm psyched to be on.
For sure. Okay. So I want to hear about the book that you are writing, how you got this idea, and just you can give a little bit of background about yourself so the listener knows who they are listening to today.
Sure. So I've been a journalist for about 20 years as a writer and an editor. And I had this epiphany a few years ago, probably in 2017, 2018, where I realized that I had stopped talking to strangers. I wasn't necessarily one of those people who were like habitually talking to strangers before. I mean, obviously I have to do it for my job because I'm always talking to people, but like out in the wild, I would do it a little bit. And I always found it kind of fun, like in a bar or in a coffee shop or in a line or something. But I realized one day I was just walking around my neighborhood and I was like, I just don't talk to people anymore. And I started to wonder why. And I started to think about like what that meant that I wasn't having these interactions, that I had like basically cut an entire category of human interaction out of my life without even choosing to do it. It just kind of went away. And so I started to think about why I would have stopped. And what I realized early on was that two things had happened. One, I had a small child, which Crystal, you know how all consuming that can be and what that does to your social life, which is it eradicates it. So I had a kid and I had a demanding job as a journalist. And so I was tired all the time and I was distracted and I was stressed out. The prospect of like just chatting with people, it was a question of time I didn't have. And also a question of just not having energy to do it. Because when you're just kind of chatting with people, you have to pay attention. Like it's kind of a demanding interaction, even though it can be sort of simple. And the other thing I realized, it was just technology. It was just my phone. So over the last few years, and I'm kind of in maybe advantageous position to understand this stuff because like email and phones and stuff didn't happen until I was in like my teens and 20s. So I remember what it was like before. I remember what it's like now, or I know what it's like now. But I realized that with my phone, like number one, it had replaced a lot of interactions that I would have had otherwise. Like I didn't have to call the pizza place anymore. I just did it on my phone. I never had to ask for directions. I just did it on my phone. And then when I was in a public place where strangers were around, I would just wouldn't talk to them because I was just looking at my stupid phone. So here I am in the, you know, the greatest city in America. I'm showing my bias here. I know you live in Chicago. So I also like Chicago. I don't want to alienate anybody. And I'm surrounded by an immense, impossible multitude of people, every type of person, every language, every religion, so many backgrounds, so many nationalities. And I'm sitting here like a dummy looking at my phone in a bar surrounded by other people who are looking at their phones like dummies. So I realized that that's kind of why I checked out. And so I started making an effort to talk to people again. And I had like an extraordinary conversation with a cab driver one night that was amazing. And just started, you know, like when I was in a bar, I wouldn't look at my phone. Like in the rare occasion that I could get into a bar, I would talk to the bartender. I would talk to whoever's next to me. And that's where the idea for the book came from. I started to wonder, like, why can it be rare for us to talk to strangers? What keeps us from doing it? And I wanted to look into everything that kept us from doing it. And that could be anything from like you live in a busy place to racial prejudice. What happens when we do it? Why it felt good to me to do it again? Why I got like an almost like physiological buzz from it? And then also look into like how people had learned to live with strangers over the course of human history. So that's basically where it came from. But yeah, that's how it started.
And, so you're in Brooklyn, New York. So that listener knows where you're, that awesome city that you're talking about.
That's right. Yeah.
So yeah, there's tons of people there. And you're so right that I noticed this too. Everybody's looking at their phone. And it's funny because I'll have those moments where I'm just like in the zone, I'm feeling good. Maybe I just had a good workout, or, and I'm looking around, I'm like, oh my gosh, everyone's staring at their phones. Like, what is going on? It's like, it's the weirdest thing when you kind of wake up and you look around and you're like, huh, this is interesting. So how do people get out of that habit? Because it's a habit. Our phones are always attached to us in one way or another, whether in our purse or in our pocket. And then you hear the ding, you hear the notification. And if you're working, it's like you're on all the time. People can access you. How do you separate from like staring at the phone to actually taking that step and building connection or talking to someone at the grocery store or wherever it is that you are, maybe on a walk or who knows?
Yeah, I think it takes a lot of mindfulness and discipline for one thing. I'm not like a total Luddite. I would say I'm wary of technology, but I also love, like, as my friends can attest, I'm a chronic texter. I love email. I really enjoy it. Like, because it's just a great way, especially if you have a kid, to just stay in touch with everybody. You just kind of keep this chatter going all day long. And I like my friends a great deal, and they're funny and smart people, and I like their texts.
So do you do those animated GIFs? Is that what you call them? A GIF? Like the little videos?
I'll do some of those, but I'll do like the draw, whatever the drawing function is on an iPhone.
I've never done that.
Yeah. Okay. I actually got a couple of those off today. So I like that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I sort of drive my wife crazy because I'm just texting with my friends a lot. So I don't hate the phone, but it definitely can throw you into like an addictive cycle. I mean, it's like the phrase is a chemical dependency loop. What the phone offers is like something novel, like a bell rings, a new piece of content comes in, a new piece of information, something. And every time you see something new, the brain gives you a little shot of dopamine. And so you just get hooked on dopamine, even though it's just like what we get off our phones. A lot of times it's just empty calories. It's just kind of junk food. It's like Twitter, which I'll look at for an hour and then just feel sort of sick, you know, like, so being disciplined about like, what is a healthy way to use it? What is a productive way to use it? Right. But also like, don't just use it because you're sitting there and it's easier. There's definitely like a phenomenon with humans where we tend towards the most easy, most efficient thing. It's like the principle of least effort is the name of the concept. So if you're in like a public place and you're just looking at your phone because it's easier than making eye contact with the bartender and it's easier than talking to someone next to you, then that's an unhealthy use of that phone. Like that phone is keeping you from socializing. And because we're hyper social animals, we need social contact. We really benefit from social contact. So for me, you know, I just tried to, you can't really say unplug because I always have it with me because I'm also a journalist. So I get a lot of emails and stuff. Mm-hmm. I would try to go for walks and I would try not to use my phone unless I knew something was coming. And I would give myself a half an hour or an hour and just go for like a long walk at night or something and just notice things and just like breathe and look at people and think about people and wonder about people and like occasionally talk to somebody. That was a big one. And then going into a coffee shop or a bar, unless I was working in a coffee shop, which I haven't done in a year and a half now, I had to like force myself to be like, I'm going to talk to the bartender. I'm going to get a sense of who this person is, like to realize the opportunity that you get when you talk to somebody. And you know, what I came to realize is I sought out these opportunities more and more is that talking to people you don't know is like a form of travel. For me, when I had a little kid, like I wasn't traveling. I wasn't, you know, I was barely leaving the house. It was like a stand-in for traveling because it's like a form of exploration in a way. And it's not to say you're like exploiting the person that you're talking to, but it really is like you can follow your curiosity. You have to be kind of alert. You have to pay attention. And if you do and you do it well, like you'll really benefit from it. You'll learn a new perspective. You'll learn about someone who has better ideas about things than you do or what life is like for them. You know, I always say it's like entering another universe. And I know there was a line in like Jewish scripture that I found that like every person is a world. And I think Norman Mailer had a line that every person is a culture. It really is when you talk to someone and you do it well, you're basically exploring another culture. You know, even if they're relatively similar to you, their experiences are going to be different enough that it's going to be interesting. And having the opportunity to see the world through their eyes is like hugely educational and kind of, it could be poignant. It could be profound. I mean, it was a real game changer for me. And it's sort of mind blowing when you're walking around and you come to realize that the millions of people around you, everybody is worth talking to. Everybody is like, has a rich life and, you know, experiences that you could benefit from hearing about. And they like it too. I mean, if you're curious about people and you're not being creepy about it, you're not like grilling them or interrogating them, which you have to learn not to do, not the creepy part, but the interrogating part, then they're kind of appreciative. Like people like that you're interested in them. People like that you're curious about them and they like to have the chance to talk about who they are and what their lives have been like. So they tend to be into it too. And so as a result, it ends up being kind of easier than you would expect it to be.
So that is really, really interesting. And it's approaching these conversations with a great sense of curiosity. And I love that you said it's like you're traveling. You know, each person you meet is going to have unique takes, unique background, unique culture. And I am super excited about this conversation right now because things are starting to open up again after the pandemic. And the past year and a half has been very isolating. I think a lot of people have lost some of those communication skills. And I've talked with some friends who have mentioned, like, there's this sense of like, wait, how do I do this again? Or, you know, those social situations where you haven't been in those environments for a while, it's like remembering the art of connection and the art of communicating. So I would love to hear your thoughts and your insights into that art. And how do you go about communicating in a way where you are really trying to have a fulfilling conversation instead of just the like, oh, hi, how's it going? Or like the quick little conversations. I think what I'm looking for is more of like a more meaningful connection.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's definitely really common. And I hear that a lot, that people are worried that they're going to be rusty and they're worried that they're going to be sort of incompetent when they get back out into the world. I was worried about that myself because I remember it was like July last year before I even saw anybody else. And I had some friends over on my roof at my birthday. And there were like four of us. And I remember being like, feeling like I was hyper, feeling like I was bad at this. And I've known these people for years, you know,
we're excited. Friends. Yeah.
Yeah. Excited, but also just kind of jittery, you know, like it was, you see this in mice, actually, interestingly enough, there are a lot of experiments on mice where they keep them in solitude for a long time. And then they release them back into the general population and they're like jittery and like agitated. Ah. I sort of felt like one of those mice. So yeah, so people, it's very common for people to feel that way at this point, especially after being trapped inside and also just enduring like a serious trauma. I mean, New York got torn to pieces by this thing. Mm. We were here the whole time. That's normal. Also, what's interesting is that in a lot of the studies, so there's like a growing group of psychologists who are studying what happens when we talk to strangers. And part of the work is figuring out why we don't do it. Like why, what keeps people from doing it? And there are a lot of answers to that question. And I go pretty deep into it in the book. But one thing that comes up a lot in a lot of this research is just that. It's that people worry that they're going to be bad at it in terms of talking mm-hmm. to strangers. So they worry that they're not going to go out. They're not going to know how to start it. They're not going to know how to finish it. They're not going to have anything interesting to say. The people that they speak to are going to think they're boring or weird or there's something wrong with them. Like there are all these different impediments to having these sorts of interactions. So this is universal, right? Like what people feel right now is just an mm-hmm. extension of how people feel kind of all the time when it specifically comes to talking to strangers. The good news is like, you're not alone. It's not, you know, you being socially maladapt. It is just like the way people are because we are out of practice with this. So the good news that people found in a lot of these studies is that it's much easier than people expected it to be. You know, a lot of these studies measured people's expectations. How long did they think these interactions would go for? What percentage of people they approached would talk to them? Would these people like them? And everyone's predictions for these conversations were dismal, right? They're like, no one's going to want to talk to me. If they do, it's going to last for 5 seconds and they're going to be annoyed. And the research found that no one, and this is hundreds of participants in these studies, no one was rejected. Like there was not a single, you know, and work by, there's a guy named Nicholas Epley, who with a psychologist named Juliana Schroeder, actually Epley is in Chicago, he's at the University of Chicago. Okay. They did a series of really famous experiments, but they found that there's no meaningful chance of rejection. So the people who did this were just not rejected. The conversations that they initiated lasted, I think, twice as long as they expected them to. And every one of them, and he put through these people into the fire too. Like he made them have these conversations on buses, on the CTA. Huh. They did it again in London, which is like a famously chilly place for these sorts of shenanigans. And like, it worked really well in London on the tube. No one talks to anyone on the tube in London, but yeah. So, you know, they found again and again, and other psychologists found this too, like the chances of rejection are very, very slim. So don't worry about that so much. There's more research on how people perceive us when we meet strangers. There's a perception that we have that after we have a conversation with someone that we don't think they really liked us that much. We may have really liked them and been impressed with them and enjoyed talking to them, but we often come away saying like, I can't stand up to that. Like that person's great. Like there's no way that they like me as much as I like them. Those perceptions end up being inaccurate too. Like psychologists have judged both sides of these conversations and both of them think that the other one didn't like them as much as they did.
Funny.
Yeah, it's interesting because it has to do with that anxiety where people think that they're not doing well in these conversations because they feel maybe a little nervous and they think their nerves are visible to the other person. Mm. When they're definitely not, because both of you, you know, when you think about having like a really impromptu conversation, it takes a lot of brain power to have that conversation because you don't have a frame of reference. You don't know who this person is. You've never talked to them before. You haven't worked up like a shorthand like you do with people that you know. So you're trying really hard. Like you want to come across well. You want to listen to them. You want to say something that's interesting. Like you're operating on a lot of different levels. And so it's difficult. It's cognitively demanding. And that's been measured too. It's harder to have a conversation with a stranger than it is to have it with like a spouse. But we believe that that struggle is visible. And it's not visible because the other person is like hanging on by their fingernails like you are, you know, they're just happy that it's going well. So, you know, that's the good news of it is that, you know, these surveys, these studies have been done in a lot of countries around the world, featuring a lot of different types of people, introverts, extroverts, people of different races, people of different creeds, people who come from different types of places. And again, and again, and again, and again, once they get past the initial anxiety of doing it, they find that it comes pretty natural to them, which it should, because again, we're like, you know, we're hypersocial. We are what one evolutionary psychologist called the ultra cooperative ape. We're like one of the few animals in nature that cooperates with strangers, that communicates with strangers. Like it's pretty rare. You talk about chimpanzees, like chimpanzees do not talk to strangers, do not cooperate with strangers. You know, they're highly xenophobic and aggressive. So the fact that it is easier than we expect is, it makes sense because this is like the base civilization. Civilization happened because we developed ways to cooperate with strangers. We developed ways to get past that anxiety, to sort of reconcile the anxiety we feel about strangers with like the benefits of strangers, the benefits of connecting with people you don't know, the benefits of working with people you don't know. But you mentioned getting this conversation to a meaningful place, which is definitely like, this is like, I kind of did this book in stages. Like what's the easiest way to do it? And what's the hardest way to do it? The hardest one is having a meaningful conversation with someone who's like a member of a group that your group is at odds with. So like I attended a convention that teaches Democrats or Republicans to literally just sit at a table and talk to each other, which is like a very challenging thing to do at the moment.
Yeah, some tension.
Yeah, a little tricky. I likened it to like, I did a lot of research on like a chimpanzee facility because I met this primatologist whose job was to introduce strange chimpanzees to each other. And it was like a harrowing process. Like it takes weeks to get them to not kill each other. When you put them together, you have to like very slowly and carefully bring them together while watching them very closely and watching Democrats and Republicans speak to each other. Felt like the chimp facility, about as good a metaphor as any for American politics right now. So, but yeah, so degree of difficulty. So getting like a little chat with like a barista to a place that's meaningful is more challenging because you need a little more time. Like having
they're
fun,
like, okay, next client. They're like, next person.
Right, you can't just stand there and be like, let me tell you about my childhood. you need to be sitting with somebody. So if you strike up a conversation, you're sitting in a cafe or a bar or on a bus or anywhere where you have time, on a plane, that's always a pretty good place to do it, in a park, then you can develop the conversation. So it's a little easier to do it. But there are a lot of techniques for doing this. And I took a class in London taught by a woman named Georgie Nightingale, who's sort of a genius. She's like a communications guru who specifically taught a class on talking to strangers that just like broke it down into all its constituent parts, this like seemingly simple interaction. It's actually pretty complicated. And a few of her tips that were great that I tried all the stuff out in the streets too, in different countries here, all over the US, was on the most basic level, make eye contact and smile. So be friendly, show that you're friendly, show that you're not like unhinged. A big part of talking to strangers is like demonstrating as quickly as possible that you're not crazy or dangerous. but it's really true.
Yeah.
And so what you can do is do it in a public place. You know, don't make people feel unsafe. Don't sneak up behind someone. Like make sure that it's well lit, that there are other people around, that like people can feel like this is a public place and it's not weird to be doing it. You know, you can comment on something that you're both seeing. So say you're both watching like a street performer or something. You can like make a comment about the street performer and then just leave it to them to make a comment back. That actually works really well because that street performer is like it's like a shared experience, right? It's a commonality between the two of you. And so you might have nothing in common, but both watching this person perform, that forms a little bond. City planners call it triangulation, like what happens when that happens. Makes you a little triangle. That works pretty well. If someone is doing something interesting or maybe wearing something interesting, a compliment goes a long way. I have to be careful as like a guy, obviously, so it doesn't come across as like lascivious or anything, but just being like, I like your shoes. Like, where'd you get those shoes? I'm in the market for shoes myself. I like those or anything like that goes a long way because it shows that you appreciate something that they put thought into. Mm-hmm. that works. Jillian Sandstrom, who's a psychology and a psychologist and at the University of Essex, does that a lot. She'll just notice mm-hmm. something about someone and just be like, just comment on it. And they'll be like, oh, wow. Like they feel sort of seen.
Yeah.
They feel appreciated. You know, they put thought into whatever that was and no one cares generally. So someone like popped up who noticed mm-hmm. it, liked it. And they were like, oh, cool. And then, you know, because we're wired in a certain way, like the tendency is to reciprocate. So if someone says like, oh, I like your whatever, then you'll be like, oh, cool. Yeah. I like your bag. And then you're now you're off to the races. Now you're having mm-hmm. a conversation. You feel that each of you is like fully human and like not crazy. And then you can talk. Mm-hmm. But the, you mentioned having like avoiding just having like a, hey, how you doing conversation, mm-hmm. which never go anywhere. This is actually really interesting. So when you're in a place, particularly in a city where there are a lot of people around, we tend to come up with ways that sociologists called regulating inputs, mm-hmm. which is like ways to keep from engaging with stuff. Because you're just bombarded with stimulation.
So much.
Like, yeah, you're downtown. There's so much stuff happening. It's too much for you to process. So you find ways to like regulate your inputs for mm-hmm. the amount of stimulus that you're taking in. And one manifestation of that is the way we talk to like a person at a cash register, which is just saying like, hey, how you doing today? And they're like, oh, I'm great. How are you? Good. And then that's it. So mm-hmm. that's a way of like addressing each other without putting any energy or any effort into that exchange mm-hmm. whatsoever. It's a completely mindless automatic response. That's known as a script. So we follow lots of scripts that just save time and save like energy because we're so bombarded all the time. So Georgie Nightingale, who's the woman who taught this class I took, teaches an approach that she calls breaking the script. So it involves being mindful of all the times you do that, which is like a lot. I mean, you'll do it a dozen times a day where you have these meaningless little mm-hmm. exchanges and figuring out a way to get it off of the script. Because you're in each other's presence. You're looking at each other. You're engaging in some kind of transaction. So there's some kind of bond mm-hmm. there happening. And the way she does it is that someone will start out on a script by saying like, hey, how you doing? And instead of saying, good, how are you? Georgie answers specifically. So her answer would be like, say I'm like an 8 out of 10. And then she'll say, how are you? And again, due to the nature of the way people communicate with each other, they'll follow that model. She has like set the terms for the conversation and established it as a different sort of conversation than they're going to mm-hmm. have. And because she did like a numerical value, the response will be in a numerical value. And I did this a lot. It works. It's like a magic trick. It's amazing. It stops. Everything slows down. And all of a sudden you recognize that you're in the presence of another human being, because I do think we tend to dehumanize service people, service workers. So they answer it with a number, and Georgie will just be like, well, what will it take you to get to like a 9? And then the way they answer will give like a little indication of who they are. You'll get a little taste. They might say, I hope this job interview goes well later. I hope like my mother is doing well or something like that. And then you can just listen and just pay attention. Mm-hmm. And when you get to that point where like something is being volunteered and it's something personal, it's something unique to that person, your job is to listen and to ask open-ended questions. If they say like, yeah, my mother's been a little under the weather and I hope she's well, you can't just be like, yeah, my mother's kind of sick too, because then the thing's just dead. Like you've already cut them off. You've made it about you. They're going to feel that this was like a bait and switch and they're going to check out. But if you ask open-ended questions, which are just journalism questions, like who, when, why, like, how are you doing with this? That sort of thing. You make it about them and you make it open-ended and you just let them answer the question. Mm-hmm. Then you'll hear a little bit more and you'll get a better sense of that person. And then in time, like, you know, and this is if you have time to do it, again, you can't do this in like a crowded line at a supermarket because people will kill you, but you just let it go. And you just like, you relinquish control of the interaction, which is intimidating for people, because I think at this point, due to digital communication, we're so used to having total control over our interactions, like a text conversation, I can answer that text whenever I want and I can rewrite it 4 times. But when I'm in like a live fire situation, I can't. And when I'm in a situation where I'm talking to someone I've never met before, resisting the temptation to like steer it towards me, or steering it towards my interests, that's the hardest thing. That was the hardest thing for me to get used to keep the microphone in front of them and just let them talk for a little bit and help them articulate what they're trying to get at. Because again, people don't ask you a lot about this stuff. You know, like your family might not ask you about this stuff. So your friends might not ask you. No one really sits down and takes like a really active interest in you. It's very rare. Not no one, but it's definitely rare, especially when people are super busy. Mm-hmm. So over time, they're feeling comfortable. They're feeling sort of appreciated. They feel that you're really interested in them because you are. You can't fake it. You have to actually be curious, or they'll sniff it out. And then they'll become interested in you. Who is this person, right? Who just seems like kind of nice mm-hmm. and inquisitive. And, you know, they're asking me questions, and then maybe they'll ask you about yourself, and then you'll start doing it. And just the magic of like human interaction, you'll eventually kind of circle in on something that you have in common. It's just this is how we form social bonds. We're very, very good at ferreting out these sorts of commonalities with other people. As long as we're comfortable. If we're not comfortable, then it's a whole other kettle of fish. But yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing to do it.
That was incredible. So that was
a ton of information and a lot of really good information and tidbits. And my favorite part of what you said, which I'm going to try it, was saying, you know, maybe I'm an 8 out of 10. I love that because it's unexpected and it's playful and it gets you off autopilot. It's just like those repetitive things you're not even thinking about. And another thing that came to my mind was just the practice of like active listening. And so often when we're talking with somebody, I think a lot of people end up thinking, well, what am I going to say next? Or what am I going to say? And you're focused more on that instead of what that person is actually saying. And that's a practice of really developing that skill of being engaged and not worrying about what's going to, you know, what you're going to say or how you're going to respond, just actively listening in the conversation and trusting that you're going to say whatever comes out of your mouth and it's going to be the right thing to say for the situation.
Yeah, for sure. It's a bit of a high wire act, but let me share this with you. This is interesting. And I think your listeners might be into this too. Have you ever heard of an organization called Urban Confessional?
No.
Okay. So Urban Confessional is the brainchild of this guy named Ben Mathis in Los Angeles. And Ben is like an actor and an acting coach. And he hit a real low point in his life. And one day he just felt that he had come unconnected from the world. Like he needed some sort of like communion with somebody. And so he ended up just talking to a homeless person. And he ended up having like this incredible conversation about this person's life. And he came away feeling good, feeling like that guy felt, he might've felt better. He might've felt less anonymous or less invisible. And Ben felt good too. So Ben starts this organization called Urban Confessional. And what do you do when you participate in Urban Confessional is that you do free listening, which is, you know, very similar to active listening. It's the same idea. But the difference is you literally make like a cardboard sign, like a cheap, ragged looking cardboard sign, and you write free listening on it and you stand on a street corner. Huh. And so they do it in pairs. And there are a lot of reasons why he does what he does. And a lot of it's very smart. But so two people stand out there with the sign, and you just stand there and you wait. And it's the greatest training. I mean, I was saying it should be training for journalists for sure, but it's really good training for anyone who needs to learn how to listen and needs to learn how to be vulnerable, not in the sense that they're like offering things about themselves, but vulnerable in the sense that you're just standing there and you're completely out of control of the situation. Mm-hmm. So I did it with Ben. I went out to LA and I spent like a morning on a street corner in East LA with him holding a sign and felt super weird about it and found it incredibly intimidating. And like, I'm a control freak and I have like a really keen sense of embarrassment. Like I was raised like Irish Catholic in Boston. So we're very easily embarrassed people. So it was horrifying to me at first. And, but then sure enough, like people come over and they're kind of like, what is this? And you explain it, Ben would just be like, we're just here to listen. We feel that people would benefit from being listened to. So we're offering this as like a service, like free service. It's not a social media play. It's, you're not selling anything. You're only there for this. You're like a repository. You're like a sounding board for people. And once you got past the initial like wariness and suspicion, people just poured their hearts out. Wow. It was amazing. And you force yourself to listen. And the rules of doing it are don't judge, don't correct them, don't get into fights with them, don't offer advice. Don't make it about you. He has a rule that I think is a really valuable rule called the 80-20 rule, where when you're doing free listening, make sure that the conversation is about them 80% of the time. And you can maybe talk about yourself just enough to like establish some sort of commonality. Mm-hmm. So if someone says they used to, you know, one guy was like a musician and I was like, well, yeah, I was a musician before I was a writer. And he'd be like, oh, cool. And so then that makes he relaxes a little bit, right? We're both musicians. That's how little it actually takes sometimes for people to feel like there's some kind of connection there. But the 80-20 rule was super useful. And I use it now when I talk to people, at least for the early stages of the conversation. You know, you can't just be grilling them for information and not give something back because then they feel that they're being interrogated. But it's like a really good way to build up that discipline to learn how to listen well. And also it will just ensure that the conversation goes places that you did not expect it to go. And that's pay dirt when you do this, when you just don't know where this is going to go. You don't know what they're going to say. You don't know who they are. Yeah. And it's often like incredibly surprising, hilarious, and sometimes really poignant and sometimes really challenging and, you know, sometimes even shattering. It's amazing. Yeah.
That's fascinating and also very intimidating, I think, to like put yourself in that situation. And thinking about myself, like I used to always feel like I would want to try and help people fix things that they were telling me their problems. And that's, I think, my healthcare background. It was like, you know, obviously patients would come trying to have me help them fix something. But I've gotten to the point now where I realize a lot of it just comes down to being able to listen. Like it's not about fixing other people's stuff or problems. It's just being there to be supportive by being kind of holding that space for that active listening. But that has taken some practice to not feel like
interject with like my opinion or, you know, I think you should do this. It's just about like being there. And with the power of connection, I was looking at some research recently, how people who feel lonely, like that loneliness in general can be more detrimental to your health than obesity and smoking. And I was like, wow, that is mind blowing. So I think these practices are so incredibly valuable. And we're kind of coming a little bit close to the end here. So I would love for you just to give like a few tangible action steps that a listener can do if they want to start to try and get more comfortable in talking to people and building connection and having that on those social interactions. Like what would be some good first steps
for them to do? To back up very briefly, the loneliness part is actually a really important thing because, you know, like a former Surgeon General of the United States referred to this as an epidemic. Like it's such a widespread problem. It's a major public health issue. It's a major mental health issue. And there are a lot of organizations that are popping up that are addressing it by trying to get people to talk to strangers. And there's a lot of research that shows that people do feel less lonely, more trusting, more connected, happier, that all these are effects of having conversations with strangers, whether they're long or whether they're short. It's a way to feel connected because loneliness is disconnection, right? For steps, we can start with something easy, which is, you know, Jillian Sandstrom, who I mentioned before, who's arguably the leading psychologist on this stuff, ran an experiment where she had, you know, a bunch of people talking to strangers and then the control group that was not talking to strangers, but part of that group was supposed to just notice people. So their job was to sit there and notice, to not talk to people, but notice people. And Jillian found that even those people who were just sitting there and just noticing people felt happier, more connected, you know, more optimistic just by like, when you look at someone, you're awakened to their humanity. Because usually if you, especially if you live in a city, people are just like objects and impediments, right? Like they're obstacles to get around on the way to your meeting or the subway. As horrible as that sounds to say, but just looking at them makes them feel, makes you feel better, makes you happier. Not to the same extent that talking to them does, but like start there. So take earbuds out, put the phone away and just watch people and think about them and look at them and just become aware of them. That's the place to start. After that, you can start making eye contact. You can smile. You can say good morning if people make eye contact back. I did all that. It was like a horrifying prospect at first, but like the people who noticed were amazingly receptive because again, it's New York. Like people don't, it's, I find it a fairly friendly town, but like people don't do stuff like that. But people were like, they would be taken aback. They'd be like, oh, good morning. And then I came to know some of those people because they were like in my morning rounds, my neighborhood. And now I see someone I know every day and I feel more connected and it's better. And then you can just keep escalating from there. So talking to someone when you're buying groceries, talking to someone, talking to the waiter or waitress at the restaurant you're eating at, if you're still eating at restaurants again. These are just little places where you're interacting with people where ordinarily you just don't pay attention to them. You'll be, might be nice. You're not doing it because you're a bad person. You're just doing it because this is just sort of the norm. You know, resolve to learn something about the waiter. When you go to dinner, like what motivates this person? Like, what would they like to do? You know, one great tip was never say, what do you do? Only say, what would you like to do more of? Is a really good one because then that cuts to who they are. It's not just like, well, I'm a waiter. Obviously, I'm standing here bringing you food. What would you like to do more of? Then that gets into their passions. It gets into who they are. It gets into their ambitions, their self-perception, all that stuff. It's great. It works super well. It actually works remarkably well.
I love that.
And then you can just keep going. I mean, there are other, you can, I'm sure people in all the, in pretty much all over the country can find organizations that host like, you know, it could be philosophical conversations or political conversations between strangers. In New York, Conversations New York is a really valuable resource for just like getting stuck at a table with people you don't know and having like an intense conversation. Urban Confessional is great. Sidewalk Talk is an amazing organization where people just set up chairs in the street and let people come and talk to them about whatever they're worried about or whatever their issues are. A lot of these organizations are in the book. But it's a good way to like just find your feet, to do it in like a safe environment, to feel more competent, to feel more confident about it. And then you can just, after a while, you get really good at it and you can strike up a conversation with anyone at any time. And that's when it gets really fun. But it definitely takes work and you have to like build up those social muscles, especially after COVID. But even before COVID, I think we were withdrawing a bit. So I think we could all stand to get a little better at this stuff and just make the effort.
Right. I love all of that. And I think just not to, try not to take yourself too seriously, you know, and I had a cognitive scientist on my show, Sian Bai, has a great TED talk, like how, why people choke under pressure and how to fix it. And she has done some research and she was talking about that. There was a study where someone, I think they had to wear a certain kind of shirt that was made them uncomfortable. And they felt like everyone in the class was going to notice. And the results were like, way lower than what the person was expecting. Basically saying like those things you're worried about, did I say that thing that people think that sounded weird or this weird people, most people don't notice, too worried about what they're doing and worried about themselves. So I think just take the pressure off yourself, lighten up, laugh it off, look at it as a learning process and have fun with it. Because all of these exercises, I think, are really interesting and fun. And I'm going to try that on a scale of 1 to 10 next time I get that question. Like, how are you today?
It's great.
That's fantastic.
Like a,
so
yeah, it's like a conjuring. But yeah, no, everything you said is right. Absolutely right.
So cool. Okay. So I'm going to have links in the episode details so people can learn more about you and your book and all of that stuff. And we're going to jump into a wellness lightning round. And I'm going to actually add a question that I haven't done after talking with you. But before we do that, anything else that you want to share about how people can find you? Anything else that you're currently working on?
No, I think this is the main focus now. I have some other projects, but they won't be out until next year. So
perfect. All right. Are you ready for the wellness lightning round?
I am. I'm a little scared. I didn't know this was going to happen.
Feel the pressure?
I do.
Okay. So my first question is a new one, and it is, what would you like to be doing more of?
Sleeping.
Sleeping. Ooh, good one. Okay.
Without question. That's an easy one. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Second one. What is a self-care routine or thing that you do personally that is a non-negotiable for you?
Walks. Taking walks.
Perfect.
Huge, huge.
And have you read a book recently that you would recommend?
Yes. I'm reading a book called The Peregrine, which is about peregrine falcons. Ooh. Because my daughter is very interested in birds. So now I have to learn about birds. I can't remember who wrote it though. I just started reading it this morning, but it's an amazing book. It's an amazing bird. It's just like it's the fastest bird in the world and arguably like the best hunter in the world in the animal kingdom. Yeah, they're amazing. So yeah,
you should watch that Wild Kratts episode if you haven't with her. My kids loved Wild Kratts. I think they have one with that peregrine or however you say it, falcon. And they loved it. Last question. Knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to yourself from 10 years ago?
It's a big question. Honestly, the big epiphany has been bet more on yourself than on an organization. Because I think for a long time I was ambitious, but in the sense that I wanted to work for like top, like big time organizations. So newspapers, magazines. And I ended up doing that. And I did it for 20 years. And I realized now that I should have just been in business for myself the entire time.
Big epiphany.
I don't like having a boss. Avoid bosses. That would have been my advice to my younger self.
Awesome. Well, this has been so much fun. I have absolutely loved our conversation. I've learned a ton. So thank you so much for spending some time with me today.
Yeah, thank you. That was a total blast. I appreciate it.
Awesome.
It was wonderful spending time with you today. Just one quick ask. This information is incredibly important to more than just you. So think of just one person today that you can share this episode with, and together we can spread this message that you don't have to sacrifice your well-being to attain success to others who need it. Valuable episodes like this one are published weekly, so you and others can have the benefit of reaching your ultimate potential. So click the share button, get this episode into the hands of just one person you know who would gain great value from it. I will see you next week.